All right, welcome to the Rod of Iron Podcast, Fundamental Baptist Breaking Down Discussions, Dogma, and Daily Events. I am your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, First Works Baptist Church, and I'm joined by a special guest tonight. We have Brother John Sieber from our church, John the Assyrian, and he's Adidas'd out right now.
Yeah.
And so,
pants and shoes, you can't see, but I got the
if
whole
we had
outfit.
A button, he's a, you know, I just got finished doing an interview with a guy on YouTube and on Instagram, King Nopal, and he's a big Trump supporter, but it's pretty cool. He believes just like we do. He listens to our preaching, but every time like a good point was made, he had a button he could press and it would go, ah, yeah. It was all like, you have this audience and like, reprobates put to death, pedophiles put to death, ah, King James Bible, ah. We gotta get a button like that for the Rod of Iron Podcast. So with that being said, Brother John Sieber's with us tonight, and looking forward to a great episode. We're just gonna get into some random topics tonight. And so, John, thanks for coming on the podcast tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Second time.
Back again. Yeah.
And if you don't remember, Brother John was on the podcast it was actually last year.
Wow. Yeah.
It was last year, and he was talking about being a pilot, and he was also talking about his experience in the monastery. He lived in a monastery for quite some time and the horrors of the monastery life. And so we're looking forward to what he has for us tonight. Don't mean to put you on the spot, but I just did. And so excited to have you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, let's get started. Dun 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 dun. So anyways, because like Ulysses' car during the last podcast, we're all here, and then there was like a text message that came in, and it was from Ulysses, but I didn't know, I just didn't really pay attention to it. But then I realized, I was like, oh, yeah, he texted me. So I look, and he said, someone's outside stealing my car, trying to steal my car. We all run outside, and the police are already out there, believe it or not. Ulysses is out there, his vehicle's out there, and there's this drunk guy out there. And I guess the story goes is that this drunk individual was inside of Ulysses' car and kind of just like looking around and stuff. And Ulysses' wife was actually in the foyer, and she's like looking at him do this. And I think she asked him like, hey, what did she ask you? Like,
where did you park?
Oh yeah, where did you park the car? And he's like, in front of the church. And she's like, well, there's someone in your car, in the car right now. So he ran out there, and this guy was out there. And there's another individual who had already called the police, right? And he's looking at him do this, and he's like, this guy's trying to steal the vehicle. Well, it turns out this guy had the same exact vehicle as Ulysses. And he was saying that, you know, oh, I thought it was my car. And the funny thing is, we go out there, and I'm looking at Ulysses' vehicle, and I'm like, man, Ulysses did a horrible job parking this vehicle. Like, why does it look like that? I'm like, this looks bad. The police is right here. Like, but it's actually Ulysses, it's actually the drunk guy's vehicle. And they're actually like about two spaces away from each other. So I don't know if the guy was lying. He might have been lying or something. But for sure, his vehicle was almost the exact same one as Brother Ulysses'. They look. Yeah, and then another thing is, this guy never leaves his vehicle unlocked. I used to leave my vehicle unlocked all the time. Like, if I go to the store, not at night, but during the day, if I go to the store, I leave it unlocked because I figured, what are they going to steal? There's nothing. There's nothing in my vehicle.
20, 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, there's nothing of value inside of my vehicle, other than of course my Bible and all that stuff. But who's going to want that? And he always locks it. Like, this guy could be driving the most raunchiest bucket vehicle in the world.
He wakes up at 2 a.m. He's like,
he's like, I gotta lock this car. I gotta lock this car.
Didn't Milan used to say that as well?
He used to lock it. He'll lock it and do the beeping sound. He's like, beep, beep. Oh, Milan. Well, that's a different story. Milan had a tick. he had a what is that? He had obsessive compulsive disorder when it came to locking doors. So like
all doors,
I believe so. Huh. For sure, his vehicle door. Like he'd press the button like 50 times just to make sure. Yeah, I'll cut this out of the podcast, but that was pretty funny though. He was obsessive. He had obsessive compulsive disorder with a lot of things. Like he couldn't make left turns.
Oh yeah. How do you get around though? You just make like three right
turns. He basically would make a right turn until he reached his destination. So if you have to make a left turn, he would make a right and right and right and right and just kind of go all the way around till he got to wherever he had to go to.
How would he be able to watch NASCAR?
Oh, you know, man, he'd freak out. He'd freak out.
Trying to come to this church?
Oh, man. Yeah, how would he come to this church? He wouldn't be able to come here. Unless he would just get off of, you know.
Yeah, take another freeway to go all the way around so you can end up taking a right.
Obsessive compulsive disorder. Obsessive compulsive disorder?
I know nothing about that.
You don't? Nah. We can't talk about it because John doesn't know anything about it. You reading any new books or what?
No, I've been super busy with, you know, between work and all the music stuff.
Aren't you learning Greek right now?
I have that on a hold right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I got too much stuff that I try to learn at the same time.
Yeah.
I always do that.
Well, John is in charge of our orchestra, okay, in our church. He's doing a great job. He's always learning these weird instruments. The saxonet or the clarinet.
Bass clarinet.
The bass clarinet looks like a dark version of a saxophone or something.
Cody makes the same joke about it every time. He's like, "Hey, you gonna throw it on the floor and turn it into a snake?"
He told me that joke on Sunday. He was like, "He's really proud of that joke."
Like four times.
It right there. That's the bass clarinet. That's it right there, right?
Yep. Yeah.
It's the dark side of the saxophone.
Yeah.
Sounds great though. It's nice and bassy.
Yeah, we needed something like that in the orchestra because we got a bunch of flutes and. Yeah, I was playing the other clarinet, which no one can hear.
Yeah.
So this is at least something people can hear.
Well, don't say no one can hear because isn't Malia learning the clarinet?
Well, the thing is,
he influenced Malia to learn the clarinet, and I think she's learning it, right?
Then
he gets on the podcast and says, "You can't even hear the clarinet."
Well, the
shout
thing
out
is,
to Malia.
The thing is, she knows that, though.
Keep at it.
I told her, I was like, because she's like, "Oh, you know, I'm nervous about playing, you know, and all this," because everyone. Whenever I try to get people in the orchestra, they always use that, right? And I'm like, don't worry. The clarinet is really easy. No one will even hear you.
Oh, you already told her that.
I told her, I was like, look, there's 7 billion people in the world. And only like 150 of those people are in this building, and they're not going to hear you anyway. So you're fine. You got nothing to be
John
nervous
about.
John
is a little rough. Hey, Malia, we can hear you, okay? We're going to mic up every single instrument. I mean, we've already mic'd up a couple of instruments already, but we want to hear the clarinet, you know? We got to hear
it. Yeah, and, you know, I really want the clarinet to get added back in, too, because now we have kind of like 4 instruments that are playing in a certain range. We have the soprano and the alto and the bass now between, you know, the cello and the bass clarinet.
So what do we have? We have a flute. We have a tin whistle.
Tin whistle slash recorder.
Slash recorder. Which, by the way, the offertory on Sunday night was awesome.
You liked it?
I loved it. I didn't expect it.
It was kind of on the fly.
We've
been practicing it for a couple weeks, but whenever I'm at work, I listen to hymns all day.
Yeah.
And I just try and imagine, like, you know, what instruments would that sound good with?
Yeah.
And I wanted that one to be with guitar.
It sounded amazing.
So it worked with the guitar.
Perfect. Yeah, because it was the guitar, the flute, and the tin whistle.
Right. So Eric, you know, we knew he wasn't going to be there yesterday anyway. And I was like, oh, man, this works out perfect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that one sounds really good. And then I got a whole bunch more stuff to play. But, yeah, we got the flute.
Tin whistle
slash recorder. And Louisa, she's going to be learning the flute as well, too.
Hmm.
Yeah, we got a bunch of talented people in the orchestra. They're just like music geniuses, all of them. Brother Carey's got the trumpet.
Yeah, and he's going to be learning the saxophone.
Yeah, so
Brother Chevy is our rock star.
Yeah.
With the guitar. Not the electric guitar, folks.
Yeah.
Acoustic.
Steel string, nylon string, both of them.
Sounds he's really good because he doesn't read music. I'm sure he can read music, but he can't read music.
He says he used to be able to read music, but he's like, but I can't do that anymore.
But the thing is, the guy has an ear for music.
Yeah.
He can just play, and it just sounds like great.
The offertory that we had, because I can't give him a piece of like sheet music. you know,
he just has to
like,
hear.
Hey, can I? Can you? You know, learn this piece and then play it on Sunday night. I just send him a video of the song, and I'm like, "Hey, Chevy, can you learn this?" And he's like, "Yeah." He only has to listen to the thing like one time. He knows all the chords. And
well, if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember when it was, but we were. I was going over some song. It was like a Christmas song, and he had never heard it before. And Eric wasn't there to play it. I just was singing it, and he started playing it on the guitar just from like the way I was singing it, and it sounded great. So he's doing a good job as well, Brother yeah. Chevy with the guitar.
Well,
then we have
he's got perfect pitch.
That's what he has.
Why, you know, he can hear a note. I've even tested him on it. You know, playing a note on the piano, and he's like, "Oh, that's an A flat."
Wow.
Yeah. So he can tell you what note everything is. That's why he can hear the key of a piece, and he knows what chords go yeah. with a piece like that. So he can just kind of like memorize the music that way.
And then we have Brother Ulysses' wife who plays the cello.
Right.
She's doing a good job. I love the cello. I love how deep the cello sounds.
Sounds like chocolate.
It does. Yeah, you're right. Actually,
I've
how
said
is
that,
that
to some people, and they're like, "Wow, what do you mean by that?" But it's like if I'm going to describe the sound, it sounds
well,
like chocolate.
Well, because when you think of chocolate, you think of rich
yeah,
chocolate.
It's rich.
It's rich.
You know, darker as
yeah,
well. You
yeah.
know, it's not this bright, cheery sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah,
the cello is very chocolatey. It's yeah. very, it's very deep. It's very brown. It's very delicious. No, I'm just kidding. Delicious to the ears.
Right.
It touches the soul though. And then we have now.
Bass clarinet.
I was gonna call it the clarinet sax or yeah. phone. Bass clarinet. Which sounds
clarinet.
Great.
Yeah. And awesome. We got a bunch more coming too.
Yeah, Malia's learning the clarinet.
Yeah, so we got Malia on the clarinet.
Soon's learning the violin. The
violin. Brother
Hike's
Hike.
Learning the cello.
The cello. And then Brother
Hike from
Cody
the Rod of Iron podcast.
He's learning the French horn.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and he played the trumpet when he was in school for
oh, okay.
I think 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So all that experience.
Well, you know what's great about this is the fact that we're calling them out right now. So there's no going
what
back.
What do you think I'm doing? What do you
yeah,
think the
there's
idea
no
is
going back. Thing? Now they have to learn it. Oh. We almost forgot. Brother Jason with the cymbals.
Oh, high sounding cymbal.
He
Brother
does
Jason.
A, yeah, he does a good job
yeah.
with that.
His cymbals and his tubular bells too.
And then Brother Jacob with the with the snare drums
yeah.
when needed.
That's our
you know, when we have
section.
Like a Victory Through Grace type song where it requires of some sort of marching type sound. And he's good at it because he used to do it in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. So
so orchestra is doing great. And of course, Eric, the professional,
right,
doing a great job on the piano. Yeah, Brother John, you're doing a great job with the orchestra. I'm looking forward to well, we don't want to talk about the projects that we're working on. Those are secret
is
projects.
Is that a secret?
It's a secret.
Okay, okay.
So you guys
I mean,
just have to stay tuned for
everyone
all
in the building knows about it.
Yeah, but not everyone not everyone who tunes into the Rod of Iron podcast knows right, of these right,
we'll,
projects. So
we'll keep it secret then.
We'll keep it a secret. We've said too much already.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to the next subject. But yeah, the music ministry is going great. And John's one of those guys. He's like a what is that called? He's like a savant kind of without the other weird stuff attached to it. this guy just learns instruments on a fly, right? You just give him an instrument, he just learns it. So yeah, thanks for helping out in the orchestra. Doing a good job.
Yeah, love to.
Amen. So speaking of languages, you said you took a break from Greek,
right? So like I said, because I'm learning all this other stuff right now. You know, kind of fell lower on the list of priorities. I'd still really want to learn Greek because mm-hmm. I love learning languages, you know, in general. I spent that whole year in Turkey where that's pretty much all I was doing.
Yeah.
I was spending time learning languages. And actually, before I had even gone on that trip, I had wanted to learn Greek.
Mm-hmm.
That was my plan, was I'd go to Turkey for a year and learn Syriac and Turkish, and then I'd go to Greece and learn Greek.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do. But I came back early because family stuff and whatnot, and I never got that chance to learn Greek. So I started with Pimsleur and all that. But
do you know Syriac?
Right. Yeah.
You can read it.
Yeah, I can read it, which was the hardest part, learning how to read it because you know it's a different alphabet. It looks very different. Greek mm-hmm. is you know a lot easier to read because it's still
oh, yeah.
a lot more similar to Latin.
And it's very
alphabet.
Phonetic.
Yeah. And Greek has vowels in
right.
it. So Syriac, there's no vowels. It's only consonants.
Mm.
So you have to know what the vowels are
yeah.
based on the context.
Yeah, I took a break from studying Greek for a little bit, just because of everything that was going on with the bombing and everything. All my energies went to other things.
Right.
But I love learning Greek. And I don't know if I'll ever master Greek, but just I feel like spending a lifetime learning it is still worth it. Not only for my brain's sake, but just for just to learn another language, especially a language that's attached to the New Testament.
Yeah.
You know, and because I was learning, I'm learning modern Greek and then reading the Greek New Testament and then also memorizing 1,000 of the most frequently used Greek words in the New Testament as well. And one thing that inspires me to learn it is the fact that obviously I want to read the Greek New Testament completely, but also because I want to refute people who try to downplay the King James.
Right.
Because a lot of people like that.
Yeah, and they like to go back to the Greek. Yeah. And some kind of scholar or whatever, like these James White types.
Exactly.
And then you hear them. Even if you just take a couple lessons on Pimsleur,
yeah.
You hear how Greek sounds. Mm-hmm. You hear like, okay, this is how this language is supposed to sound. It sounds like it sounds that way. And right. Then you hear someone like James White saying, you know, skleros, estin, ha, logos, yeah. Utas. And you're like, what is the matter with this guy?
Skleros, utas.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything.
It sounds like a Star Wars language or something.
Yeah. You see people like that.
Well, you know, the funny thing is...
the people believe them.
Oh, yeah.
And people take them for experts. And absolutely. They think, oh, yeah, this person is so smart. I remember Greek and Hebrew and all that.
I knew this guy who claimed to be like a Greek expert. And the guy is a total heretic. Like, he was a wolf, and he used to go to the church that I used to attend. And just a complete wolf. And he would go around telling people that why they shouldn't use the King James Bible. But everyone knew him as the man who knew Greek because he would always bring up these Greek terms and this is what it really says in the Greek.
Yeah.
And who can refute him because no one knew Greek. And so when he would tell me that, because he would try to influence me and some of the other young guys, I would just tell him like, you know, you do know more than me, but I'm just going to stick with the King James because I believe that's what it is. I believe it's the word of God.
Exactly. And, you know, even if maybe he does know a lot of Greek, the people who translated the King James Bible more.
Yeah.
They knew way more.
Well, now studying Greek, looking back, I realized that this guy didn't even know any Greek whatsoever.
Which is often the case. You know, yeah. they don't know anything.
What they're doing is they're referencing their lexicons and all that, and they're not even doing they don't even know modern Greek, which I've learned within the last couple of years that obviously one of the best ways to learn Greek is learn Kini Greek is to learn modern Greek. And to have the modern pronunciation to it.
Right.
And I've learned that if sometimes when people claim to know Greek and they know biblical Greek, but they can't even speak the language, you just kind of lost credibility.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to teach me Spanish when you don't even speak Spanish?
Right.
How are you going to teach me what the Spanish Bible says if you don't even
speak a lick of it?
You can't hold a conversation in Spanish.
Yeah.
So I learned that, of course, through Pastor Anderson and just personal studies. And even as, like, I'm not deeply into Greek, but just a surface study of Greek and reading through the Greek New Testament and learning some of the vocabulary words, already I've kind of, like, debunked a lot of the things that people throw out there. And you can, just in your casual reading of the Book of John or you know, the Book of Revelation or even through the Book of James, I've seen things. I'm like, whoa, these people have lied about this or this person lied about this. Like, this is actually what it actually says. So it's really good. I like learning Greek. It's good for the mind, but it's also good just to be able to debunk the gainsayers and what they say against the King James Bible. And then, too, Lord willing, if I ever do, quote-unquote, master it, and what I consider to master the language or to be fluent, should I say, is be able to hold a conversation, is when I'm able to win Greek speakers to the Lord.
Because
that's really what I want to do. I want to be able to go to Greece one day with my Greek New Testament and just start the conversation in Greek and preach the gospel in Greek and get them saved in Greek, you know, pray in Greek and do everything in Greek.
Not have to rely on any English
at No, all just kind of like speak it as though it's like a heart language.
Right.
I would love to do that, and that's my goal eventually.
Do you have a time frame on when you want
to
do that?
Well, I want to head to Greece, not Cyprus. I want to head to Greece next summer.
Next summer?
I'd like to, yes. And, of course, Pastor Robinson... We've been planning this trip for many, many eons. Not eons, but for a long time. We've been wanting to go, and of course, with COVID and everything, everything's shut down. Over there in Greece, the whole COVID thing is really bad.
It's very bad over there. Yeah, because like I know Turkey also is very bad. Like, you can even get fined for not wearing a mask outside.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, like in Greece, you have to text if you want to get outside. Like, you have to text the government. Like, can I go out? It's like crazy. So obviously, they're probably nowhere near, you know, where we're at right now in the United States.
And things even here, you know, they've started loosening up, but it's still pretty bad. Yeah. You know? It's like.
So hopefully by next year, if they open up, you know, I'd like to go. And Greece is very large. So it's obviously not a trip where we're just going to hit all of Greece. We have to go to somewhere specific in Greece. Right. And I'm either thinking, you know, Thessaloniki or Athens or one of the islands, Ste Mykonos. That's one of the islands.
You want to go somewhere with like a lot of population density? Yes. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, a lot of population density. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess we'll see when we get there who's really receptive towards the gospel. Obviously, you know, Pastor Anderson said that a lot of the younger generation are very open to the gospel because they're rejecting Orthodox.
Right.
And it just reminds me of the Catholics because a lot of the younger Catholics have kind of strayed away from Catholicism. Yeah. Because of their self-righteousness and the self-righteous attitude the Catholics have and the priests and all that. And they're kind of open towards the gospel, you know? So I think it might be the same with the Orthodox Church.
You gotta catch them in that in-between point, you know? Because they're obviously rejecting Catholicism and Orthodoxy.
But they could
you
want
to catch them. Yeah, because they could go too far. Because then they would be like, you know, oh, no, I'm completely atheist and stuff like that.
Right.
Where because of the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, then they just hate everything about the Bible. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Brother Robinson actually gave me a Bible, the Bible of the Bear. It's a massive Bible. It's really awesome. It's this first Spanish. Are you talking to someone on your watch, man, or something, or what? Just kidding. He loves that watch. He gave me the Bible of the Bear, and it's a massive Bible. It's the first canonized Bible in Spanish. It's 1569. It's really good. But I'm intrigued by those things, especially when it comes, you know, Greek is very similar to Spanish.
Right, even the sound of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think that's what helps with my pronunciation as well, which I'm sure even speaking Syriac helps with the pronunciation in Greek, would you say, or no?
They sound quite a bit different.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would say they sound very different.
So you speak Syriac and what else?
Turkish.
So does Turkish help you with the pronunciation?
No.
Oh, okay.
Turkish and Greek are like enemy languages.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Really? Well, you know, language transfer.
Yeah. Right?
The whole idea behind that, it was started by, I believe, a Cypriot. Man,
oh,
because on Cyprus they
have
both.
Yeah,
they have Greek people and Turkish people.
Yeah,
so
it was used as a tool to get the Turkish people to get
Turkish people to be able to learn Greek.
Greek
people learn Turkish and vice versa
because of the vast difference of the language.
Right,
there.
So that you know communication could exist between them, so that you know possibly through that there would be less strife, there would be less you know anger.
So is there a lot of strife between Turkish people and Greeks?
I mean, I don't know how it is now, but. I don't remember exactly when it was, but even in the last century, there was a lot of bad stuff because Cyprus, a lot of bad stuff and Turkish aggression and all that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you talk to like the young people in the metropolitan areas in Turkey, yeah, of course, they're not for anything like that, but it's a country where it's still, the government is still very corrupt, you know? The government and the people are not really the same thing, and it's becoming more Islamic also. Mm. Where Turkey used to be a country that was, you know, Muslim empire, the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
And then with the revolution, they became completely secularized to the point where you weren't allowed to wear like a hijab in public. You know, you couldn't wear the burqa and stuff like that. It was made, you know, illegal. And they changed from the Arabic alphabet to the Latin alphabet. Mm. So they were trying to like westernize the country. But now it's going more back towards that, towards, you know, Islamism and stuff like that.
Wow.
And with that comes, you know, all the Islamic teachings of jihad, conquering everything.
Yeah.
Because you see in all of Muslim history, they're always just trying to conquer and expand and all of that. You know, they even went as far as Spain and everything, conquered all of Spain. So, you know, with that coming back, there may be more aggression, tension in the future.
Well, I hope that I mean, my hope is that Greece would one day open and then we can preach the gospel there. But who knows? Maybe, you know, there won't be an opportunity. We don't know. Sometimes you wonder about certain countries because obviously Greece at one time was the hub of Christianity.
Right.
Just like Jerusalem one time was the hub of Christianity, so to speak, where the truth was. But then it died out. Different parts of the world have been that way. And Greece was kind of like that because you had all these Gentiles believing on Jesus Christ. They're starting these churches, the church at Thessalonica, and there's churches in Athens. There's Gentile believers in Turkey, you know, modern day Turkey, and they're Greek speakers there, and all these things. But then it just kind of died out. So you kind of wonder if God allowed it to kind of close up a little bit because they kind of had their chance. I hope that's not the case, because I would love to go over there and just. I think it'd be very nostalgic to go win people to Christ where a lot of the original quote unquote Christians were from the New Testament. But you never know, you know. I guess another good thing if we never go over there is that I can learn the language and just make videos in Greek, you know. Just make videos and promote it over there.
Yeah.
Preach the gospel in Greek and preach biblical truths in Greek, make little videos in Greek so we can send that over there. So who knows? But
doesn't it seem like it keeps moving west, you know, the central hub of Christianity, you know, starting in like Israel and then into Greece and then into Europe and England over to America, and it keeps moving westward, you know.
Well, it's funny you say westward because now, I still think it's here, but you see a lot of things going on in the Philippines, for example.
Right.
And there's a lot of missionaries being sent out of there. A lot of people are very receptive towards the gospel. And in fact, I had a Filipino missionary contact me, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was a couple weeks ago. And he was a guy who I knew back in the day when I was in the old IFB church. And he's an old IFB missionary. And it was funny because somehow I found out that he was, you know, because missionaries in the old IFB, they do deputation. What that means is they go to different churches to get support,
right?
So they can go on the mission field. Well, he was doing that. So he was going on a deputation, and he ended up going to Verity Baptist Church for deputation.
Right.
And, you know, Pastor Jimenez is just like, you know, if he's preaching the gospel, who cares what he believes about end times Bible prophecy? If he's going to get the work done, you know, I want to support a missionary. And so I think he started getting supported by Verity Baptist Church. And when I was at my old church, I found out about that. And so he ended up coming to our church, and he's like associated with someone that's associated with our church, and just, you know, a church that was sent out of our church. And he came to our church, and I was like, hey, I think I know you're, you know, brother so-and-so. And he's like, yeah. I was like, didn't you go to Verity Baptist Church? And he was like, whoa, man, yeah, I did. You know, we're kind of different on end times, but, you know, they like soul winning. I was like, cool, you know. I thought it was really cool that he went there. And but he recently contacted me and said that he's making the switch to post-trib. And he's like, he said, you know, I believe in the post-trib pre-wrath now. He goes, I need your advice. What do I do? Because I know I'm going to catch a lot of heat for this.
Right.
And I said, yes, you are. And you're probably going to lose everything. And I was like, I'm just preparing you. But I was like, you just need to preach God's word and preach the truth no matter what, you know, and just wherever the chips may fall, just deal with it, you know. And so, but he agrees with us on a lot of stuff. But he was telling me that a lot of the churches over there, they're very Ruckmanite, you know, they're dispensational.
Yeah, I even heard that from Jerry and Brother Jeff from Verity as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of Baptist churches out there,
yeah,
supposedly, but they're all Ruckmanites.
Right. Which is unfortunate because it's the tares being sown among the wheat, you know, because you have a lot of people that are getting saved over there. I mean, anytime I hear about like a new IFB missions trip going to the Philippines, a ton of people are getting saved. You got Brother Matthew Stuckey over there. He's doing a great
Will
work.
Over there all the time.
Yeah, Brother Will's over there. And now we have this guy who's out there, and he's getting a bunch of people saved too.
And even Filipino people here. You knock on someone's door and they're a Filipino, and they're always receptive.
They kind of remind me of Belizeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Belizeans are just very kind.
Very polite.
Very polite. They will not tell you no, which is good and bad. It's good because they'll give you the time of day and they'll listen.
But, you know, they might not even be really interested.
Then, exactly.
Yeah, they're just kind of like lose your time.
Going along to get along kind of thing. But it's interesting how you said that it was moving west and it seems like it's going kind of like around the world again. But who knows? We'll see. Hey, did you guys hear about that? About those aliens? You guys hear about that?
No.
I don't believe in aliens. But you know the correct term apparently is UAPs. Okay.
Oh, I have heard of this.
Have you heard of this?
I've heard of this from my dad. I had a conversation with my dad other morning over some coffee, and he was talking about it because
it's a good old conversation between a father and son. Son, well, let me tell you about UAPs.
Well, he's a pilot, right? My dad. So he's
Wait. We'll get into that. Wait, don't tell that yet. Let me talk about this first, and then you'll jump in with that.
Okay. All right.
So we're living in the day and age where movies are coming to life now, it seems. Things that were only talked about in movies seem to become a reality later on. And I'm not saying it's real. I'm just saying like the government, media, social media, the news, they're speaking of it as though it's actually real. And what I mean by that is, you know, back in the day, you would hear about UFOs and you see movies about UFOs and aliens, and people just kind of laugh it off. But now they're actually coming out and saying that these UFOs are real. And they're not calling them UFOs, they're calling them UAPs, which is unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Right.
And the reason they're coming out with it is because of the fact that apparently these pilots are seeing these UAPs fairly frequently, okay? And they're capturing these UAPs on camera, on radar, and, you know, and so no one was doing anything about it. And so these pilots just basically, or I'm sorry, not the pilot, but someone who works for the government basically took this to the New York Times or something and just published it basically, right? And now, like, they're catching a lot of heat. They're saying, hey, what are you doing about this? Because now these pilots are coming out and say, well, we see this all the time. We're seeing these UAPs all the time. We see them every day. Anytime we fly out, we see them over and over again. We're always capturing them. And we're always addressing, letting our superiors know that we're seeing these things, and we tell them, and they just kind of brush it off. Well, now it's getting to the point where they're giving the Senate like a lot of heat, and the Senate's basically coming out and saying, well, you guys better bring a report about what these things are by the end of June. We need to find out what these things are. And these pilots who are basically testifying to seeing these things, who are witnessing these UAPs, they don't believe it's aliens. But I'm sure a lot of people out there are like, they're aliens, you know? They're just saying, like one of the pilots was saying, I don't think it's aliens. I'm thinking it's like China or Russia and some, you know, it's a security breach,
right?
Is what we see. It's a risk. Because of the fact that these UAPs are traveling at an extreme velocity. Their fastest jet can go about 2,600 miles an hour or something like that, 2,000 miles an hour. Whereas these UAPs can travel up to 13,000 miles an hour. And, you know, they have – there's
and
no,
they don't leave a contrail. And
yeah, they don't
like
leave
that.
Any of
that's
that.
That's one thing that my dad had
said.
Because he's been looking into this, you know, because he – watches airplane stuff all the time.
Your father's a pilot.
My father is a pilot, right. Yeah. So, you know, he's been into aviation his whole life. And
so has he ever seen a UAP?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
We have it on here on the Rod of Iron podcast first, folks. We need to have brother John's dad come on the Rod of Iron podcast. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So, actually, a few years ago, and it's not something that he sees all the time or
okay.
every day, but a few years ago, and he saw... some kind of
well, walk us through what
light,
what happened.
Some kind
what
of
is it? That
object.
He was flying. You know, describe the story a little bit. It was sunny out. You know,
yeah, he was flying in cruise. So you know,
what does that mean?
Way up there, cruise altitude. You know, somewhere between, depending on where he was flying. You know, somewhere between 30,000 feet, 41,000 feet, something like that. So
uh-huh.
way up there, and out of you know, all of a sudden, he saw some kind of. It, you know, he took a video of it too, so I've seen it, and it's like some small little looks like a light, and it's not a reflection of
it
anything.
It was below him?
No, it was, you know,
right
off
front.
Off to the horizon. Yeah. And it was moving in a way that did not look normal or natural in any way. You know, because an airplane, if it was an airplane and it was just like a reflection of the sun off an airplane just
gradually,
right. slow, moves across one direction. But this thing was like, you know.
Like nothing. Yeah.
You know, weird thing. And he asked the controller, air traffic control, he said, you know, we're seeing this thing out in front of us. Do you know what it is? And they just say, no, we don't see anything. So,
What did he record it with?
With his phone.
Oh.
Yeah. So, it was moving all weird, and he saw that, and he was like, ah, man, that's probably something I should capture on video.
Yeah.
So, he recorded it. I'm sure he still has the video.
Yeah, let's get that video real quick.
Yeah. And then another one that he had seen, he and his friend had seen, actually from the ground, where they were at the airport, and actually I may have a picture of it.
Oh my!
Yeah,
you see it here first, folks, on the Rod of Iron podcast. Yeah, so apparently this is something that people frequently see. Now the unfortunate thing is that the public will hear about this, and the vast majority of people will think that they are actually aliens. You know, like little green men or something.
Yeah, which my dad does not believe.
Yeah, because your dad's probably a reasonable individual.
Right.
Who, oh yeah, see, they're on 60 Minutes. What does it say? Navy pilots recall. Can you make that screen bigger? Oh, wait, I know what this is. This is basically, I saw this too. I saw this as well. This is what he saw when he was flying?
No.
This is something else. Yeah, this is from the ground. So I saw this. This is basically, I don't know if I'm describing this correctly. I'll put it on the screen in just a little bit. But they're sending something into orbit, basically. And this is just what it looks like when it's sent into orbit. When like NASA sends something into orbit, like a satellite of some sort. Because I actually saw this one time and I was like, what am I looking at? Like I saw it with my own eyes. About 2 years ago.
That's about when this happened.
Oh, okay. That's yeah, probably
so
the one.
Probably the same thing.
You just lost all credibility. No, yeah, I'm just kidding. Well. I'm kidding. Yeah,
but it left like this thing hanging in the sky. Then you saw this too, right?
I saw that. Yep. Yeah. Yep. I remember looking at that and I was thinking to myself.
Aliens.
What in the world? No, I just thought to myself, like, did the government just mess up and just like make this happen right now? I'm like, what am I eating here? I was actually at a birthday party. I was at some kid's birthday party with my wife, and we just looked at him, and I was like, look at that. I was like, what is that? Am I seeing this? Are my mind's playing tricks on me? I forgot. Here, I'll tell you what it is right now. Because I talked to someone who's into all this stuff or whatever, the NASA. And I know there's people out there that hate NASA. People in our church. I don't care. Let's see here. Where is this? Let's see here. He messaged me about it. This guy, documentary. Come on. Or maybe I don't have it. Never mind. Anyways, this guy told me what it was, but I don't see it on here. He was just telling me that it's some sort of because he highlighted it in his stories and basically said, all right, this has now – they finally send it into orbit. It's going to be up, you know, for this amount of time or whatever. And I was like, oh, man, I was wondering what that was. And he was just saying that it's some project that NASA was working on. But that's definitely different than what your dad saw, right?
Right. So this is separate. What he saw
because they're leaving a trail
flight, yeah, which leaves no trail.
Yeah, because it has propulsion, but it doesn't have any like exhaust or anything that it leaves behind, right?
Right. But even you know if it didn't have any exhaust or anything like that, if there was something moving through a medium like air at that speed,
yeah,
it would disrupt the air just in the same way, you know. You move through the water in a boat, even if you don't have
cause any a ripple
exhaust,
effect.
Yeah, say you're in a little rowboat, you can still see, you know, the wake created by the boat because it's, you know, pushing through that medium.
So does that happen with aircrafts as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, an example of a good example of when that happens is when an aircraft breaks the sound barrier.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that before.
You see the shockwave. Yeah. You see the Mach cone.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that.
Because what it's doing is it's going through the air and it's punching through the air so fast where the air can't, you know, just slip around the aircraft and it just busts around it.
Wow.
So if something was moving at an incredible speed, you know, like the thing that my dad saw in that video, it would leave something behind, even if it didn't have propulsion or whatever, even if it was something. That's why my dad, he was saying, you know, he's like, they're saying it's moving at this crazy speed, but it's not leaving anything in the air, you know, because anything that would move that fast would leave some kind of contrail, some kind of wake.
Unless it's some sort of advanced technology that the government has created.
We have no idea how it works, but that's what I would reckon it is. Yeah. Because,
well, it's either that or some sort of or it's just some sort of visual that the government's creating that's not even really there, right? Wouldn't that be an explanation for like some? I'm not saying it's like a hologram, but it maybe some sort of technology where it looks like it's there, but it's not really there. Like a projection of some sort, you know? Because like you said, for something to move at that speed, it would have to leave some sort of ripple effect in the air around it, right? The atmosphere around it. But who knows?
It could be all kinds of stuff. And, you know, even if we look back, things that now for us are kind of like old technology.
Yeah.
If you look back, you know, 60, 70 years ago, they were things that are unfathomable.
Absolutely.
Like the SR-71, this really, really fast plane. You know, goes over Mach 3, three times the speed of sound.
Yeah.
You know, it's faster than a bullet, and it's a manned airplane. So you have a man inside of an airplane who's moving faster than a bullet. And if you were to try to describe that to someone, you know, even 70 years ago, they would think like, oh, no, that's crazy. You know, nothing moves that fast. Yeah. It's impossible and all this.
But now it's just normal.
Now, because, and that's another thing that the government had kept secret for so long. Because they started developing that in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they started flying it, I think, in 1964. But in total secrecy. And same thing. They made sure to keep things covered up and all that. You know, the surveillance aircraft. And people had, you know, questions and sightings. And the government had to, like, kind of talk around it. So,
well, that's what could be that's what I think.
Same situation, yeah. Right now, just with
I believe it's just some advanced technology that the government's working on, because if these pilots are saying that they see this every single day, you know what I mean? Like, if it was China or Russia, you know, and they had this technology to just breach security and just fly and not be able to be captured. I mean, don't you think like they would have done something about it? Like they would bomb us or destroy us.
Right.
I mean, that's some pretty advanced technology. But secondly, you know, there is the government just probably testing something out. And like you said, you know, there's technology back in the day that, I mean, I'm sorry, there's technology today that even 50 years ago, people would think is just unfathomable. I remember being a kid watching a cartoon called Dick Tracy. And Dick Tracy was this, he was like a detective, and he's talking to his watch, right? And we thought it was just like the coolest thing ever, like to talk into your watch.
I think it's never possible.
It's never possible. It's just science fiction stuff. But here's an iWatch.
Right.
Okay. You know, our phones are little computers that even 50 years ago, we would never have imagined that what we can do on a phone. Like you could literally operate everything on a phone. You know, your credit cards are on here. You can literally just swipe your watch or your phone on it, and then you just pay for something. It's just easy, you know? So it's not far-fetched that these UAPs are just simply the government testing out some advanced technology. But I'll tell you what it's not. It's not aliens, okay? And the reason we know it's not aliens is because of the fact that aliens aren't real.
Exactly.
God did not make aliens, okay? And so, but unfortunately, you know, I guarantee you there's going to be the vast majority of people in this world who, because they watch too many X-Files and sci-fi movies and Star Wars, that they really believe it's aliens.
Yeah.
And there's a whole culture behind that. And I think it's an anti-God culture.
Of course, yeah, because I had this conversation with my dad, too, because he was like, oh, yeah, people are saying it's aliens and whatever. And I was like, well, aliens, that's... If you believe the Bible, or if you claim to believe the Bible. You can't believe in aliens. No. You know, if there were aliens on some planet light years away, why did God send Jesus here?
Exactly.
You know, why wouldn't God ever mention that he made all these other people
right.
on these other planets?
Yeah.
You know, for God so loved the world, this right. world.
Right.
You know, so... I mean, even for a lot more reasons, but...
I've heard people try to use the Bible to justify that aliens exist because of the visions that Ezekiel saw and the you know, the terminology that the Bible uses and the wording, but it's so far-fetched to think that there are some other created beings. And here's the thing, more often than not, people will state that aliens, because they believe in aliens, they're like, well, these are actually creators, you know? They were here millions of years ago, and that's how we came about. And they create all these crazy, you know, theories of how we came to life. I mean, Joe Rogan, who's a pretty popular podcast guy, believes in aliens. I mean, he believes that aliens exist and that we're communicating with them already and all these things. And people follow that guy, and they fall into that trap of nonsense, you know. But you can't be a Bible-believing Christian and believe in aliens. This is bottom line. And some people, they want to justify, they want to say they don't believe in aliens, but they kind of do. So they try to choose the safe ground. It was like, well, it's demons. They look like aliens or something, you know? But folks, I mean, if that's you, don't be offended at what I just said. You know, demons don't operate at that level. You know,
what are they doing there anyway?
Exactly. Flying spaceships or something?
What do they got to do up there? You know, demons.
Exactly. Well, he's the prince of power of the air. Right. People say stuff like that, but it's, you know, obviously this is what I believe when it comes to demons. Okay. Is demons influence the powers of this world, the authorities of this world, to carry out a satanic nefarious agenda.
Right.
They'll empower them by giving them authority, but they don't give them technology. Men create technology.
Right.
We create things. We have the ability to create things because God has given us that mind to be able to do so.
Right.
And so there are human beings in this world who are very talented, who have a lot of ingenuity. They're creators.
Because we're created in his image.
Exactly. You know, so therefore we himself, yeah, right. So therefore we create. What Satan does is he seeks out the creators of this world to influence them, to turn those creations into something, to become inventors of evil things, as the Bible puts it. You see what I'm saying? So I don't think people are communicating with demons to learn technology. I think some people are just endowed with a lot of knowledge and creativity, and Satan seeks those people out.
By giving them a bad intention.
Yeah, or authority,
right?
Power, because power corrupts. You know what I mean? And so, you know, and the proof of that is this, is that if demons were giving human beings technology, then why does he just give everyone technology? You know, the knowledge of technology. I'll tell you why, because of the fact that not everyone's a creator. So that's why he chooses these people of authority or clout or influence, and they rule over them. You know, they possess them. Because inventions are not evil. You know, people want to say like a phone is evil or something, or, you know, I don't know. The internet is evil. It's not. These are inanimate.
Amish or anything like
that. Yeah. But there's people who believe that. This can be used for good things. It's the people who use it who can very much take it into an evil avenue and do wicked things with it, you know? So who knows what's going on with those UAPs? It's a new technology. They move very fast. Okay. These pilots are coming out and they're just like, I don't think they're aliens. I just think they're just advanced technology and, you know, we just don't know what it is. But it's causing such a stir that the government or the Senate is basically saying, all right, you need to create a report or come up with a report and report on this and let me know what this is.
And they're saying this to who? They're asking who to make this report?
The military or something, or the government or something. I don't know.
And... Yeah, because I'm not familiar with this whole thing. Are all of these sightings and all of these videos or whatever, are they all taking place over our country? Are they all taking place over America?
Yes, they are. I'm sure there's sightings in other places, but all of these ones that are being talked about, these videos they're coming out with, are from our area. And they'll say, you know, because they'll show the videos, and this is the worst thing about this, is that the videos are always bad. They're always pixelated.
Right.
it's radar and you just like a circle or something. But they claim that they have better video of these UAPs like 50 feet away. But they don't want to release that. It's nonsensical, and it's unfortunate because I'm telling you, just a lot of people are going to take that and they're going to run with it and say aliens exist. And I think sometimes even things like this can turn more people away from God. Because it's like, well, here's fact. We've seen aliens. We haven't seen God.
And that's the thing, though, also, because those people, they say that, and they say, oh, well, aliens are real, therefore the Bible can't be true. Because they know that the two can't mix.
Right.
So someone who tries to mix them, yeah, they're on the wrong side of both, you know, right. they make no sense at all, because even someone who's not involved in it at all can say, well, yeah, the Bible and aliens obviously don't mix.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if 10, 15 years from now we just have like a new form of technology. I mean, didn't we go from horses to vehicles? I mean, try explaining a vehicle to like someone in the Bible times.
Right.
Like, what?
And it's kind of exponential growth too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so much has happened. There was, you know, how many thousands of years before where the developments in technology were really minimal, you know, stuff like architecture and primitive forms of engineering and all that. But, you know, whatever, in the last century, we've gone from so little to so much, and it's all accelerating because we can use the technology itself to create more.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and it is exponential because when it comes to things of the internet or just computers, it doesn't grow gradually. It's very exponential. Like it just, it speeds up more. That's why it's not hard to think, to believe that the New World Order could be around, right around the corner. The end times could be right around the corner because of the fact that the technology is just getting so advanced. You know, you 50 years ago, if you're talking about the Mark of the Beast, people would say it's like a tattoo that says 666. On your arm or on your forehead, right? But now we can see it would be more of like a technological chip that's implanted in your right hand or in your forehead, you know? But anyways, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Maybe you can shoot over that video of your dad.
I'll see if I can find it.
See if you can get it.
Yeah, he should be back. He was on a trip wherever. He's been flying all over the place. He was on workation. He goes to all these fancy places in this airplane and just, he sends me videos. He's like, I'm at work and he's just walking on the beach. There's like these crystal blue waters and everything.
Wow.
Oh, like video call him. And I'm like at like 4 a.m. because over there I have to call him at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Because of the huge time difference. And I'm just like a wreck, you know, I'm starting my day.
He's at the blue beach.
Yeah, just in the dark. And, you know, the video opens up and he's just sitting there and there's like a bunch of yachts behind him. He's like, this is my room. And I'm like, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But he doesn't even like it. He's always away. He doesn't get to see his kids and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Yeah, see if you can get that video and then we'll shoot that on the Rod of Iron podcast. If you guys saw it on here already, that means we got it before. John got it to us before we uploaded it. I'll see if I can
get it tonight.
Yeah, that'd be good. That way I can post it tomorrow or something. I can put it on the video tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, Brother John, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, I mean, I exhausted all the stuff I wanted to talk about last time.
Well, you just talked about airplanes and the monastery and all that.
So.
Hey, I was glad to have you on here, man. We talked about some pretty interesting things. Good conversationalist. So, amen, folks. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to the Rod of Iron podcast. Be sure to watch the episodes, full episodes on YouTube, or you can go on Spotify, listen to them on audio. You can go on our website, fwbcla.org. And so looking forward to seeing you all on the next episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. God bless.